ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, come one, come all. Can you imagine? You find yourself in a cult, and then once you escape, you accidentally find yourself in the middle of a sex trafficking ring? Yes, it could happen to you. Amanda Catarzi is the guest today, and she lives to tell the tale. It's all coming up on Open Loops, Conversations That Bend with Greg Borgstein.
Open Loops.
Open Loops. Open Loops.
Open Loops. Open Loops. You must listen to the Open Loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open Loops.
Welcome to Open Loops, Conversations That Bend. I'm your host, other than conscious thought leader, perhaps we should say unthought leader, cultural hypnotist, countercultural curator, and just a strange dude. Transformational entertainment, you get some weirdos. Greg Borgstein, welcome to the show. Yes, we have a special guest. Now, what is Open Loops, for those who've never been here before? An open loop is a concept that comes from marketing, from hypnosis. It's the dot, dot, dot. It's the cliffhanger. It's the thing that you wonder after the question that makes you go, I'm not sure, and I'm not sure what I'm not even sure about. It's an unconscious provocation. This show is about me bringing on guests, talking to you directly with the goal of challenging your existing belief system with radically unique ideas to stimulate your unconscious mind so you can step into the highest version of yourself. Today, we have somebody that really manages to do that because her unconscious mind went through a lot. I've been looking to do this for a while, meet somebody that was a member of a cult, figure out what's going on there, figure out what psychology happens when you're a victim of abuse. And not only did she have the cult angle, she had the, I later unknowingly, I didn't even realize it was happening. Seems like that's what happens most of the time with these cases. Found myself in a sex trafficking ring. Amanda Catarzi. You know, sometimes on the show, we do a little more entertainment and talk about things that are fringe but fun, like demons. Well, guess what? It's not as, despite Amanda's amazing sense of humor and just overall positive demeanor, I really wanted to bring to light this situation in a way that gave it the weight it deserves. I mean, yeah, I had the circus music to draw you in, but that's just because, well, you'll find out. Amanda has a circus connection. Yes, I really applaud Amanda's courage. She now does this copywriting and niche coaching, and she has a marketing agency where she works with people to refine their message. And even on her website, if you go to her webpage, Inquiry Co., you see immediately, this is inquiryco.com, she says, I was raised in a cult and was sex trafficked. That, to me, is the ultimate level of mastery over your past and working what you've got into your story. She is amazing person. I am so happy to share her story with all of you today, as well as even, you know, if any of you are in a situation like this or know of someone, she shares resources. She's a great voice. So I gave her information and a resource that she shared with me in the show notes. If you feel like this is the type of interview or conversation you think is worth sharing, please definitely subscribe to Apple Podcasts and rate and leave a review so we can get more of this out there. Now, I present to you the wonderful, the enlightening, and my gosh, the remarkable. I could keep coming up with other circus superlatives, but she really, it's not a superlative. She is these things. Amanda Katarzy, thank you for sharing your story, and thank you all for listening. I can tell this interview that's happening right now is about to get very interesting. I can tell. Well, everybody on Open Loops, I have Amanda Katarzy, a copy and niche specialist. She does the copywriting thing, but we were just talking before this interview, there is a chance that I could be interviewing Q right now. QAnon, I might be on this. This is amazing. This is an amazing opportunity for me. Amanda, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Please do not get me blocked or kicked off social media.
Look. Well, I mean, look, you have quite an amazing story. And I think that it's been very tricky to navigate the lines of what's going on right now with regard to sex trafficking. Because if you, the fact that it's become so polarized, because the idea of there's a network of elites who are, I'm already like worried I'm going to terrify you. But yes, this idea that there's a network of elites who may or may not be involved in Hollywood, may or may not be involved in government, that are systematically involved in specifically child sex trafficking is something that's been claimed a lot by the alt-right and the conservatives and supposedly even people. I mean, we're talking after the attacks in Washington that happened Wednesday. Like, that has been claimed by them. And, you know, the problem is when it becomes so partisan, the truth gets mixed up, and some people will like dismiss the very idea that this stuff is happening. But then you've got liberals and Harvey Weinstein and people on the other side who are like, well, Me Too's happening, so there's clearly something there systematic. And I feel like I'm not sure what side you lean. We don't need to get into that, but you have experience that suggests that you are somewhere in the middle where there is truth. So that said, I had you on because I've been dying to talk to somebody that's been in a cult and learning about like what that is. So Amanda, like, let's start there. I'm very curious. What was the moment you discovered that you were part of this ring of sex trafficking in a cult that was larger than you even realized it was?
So the cult section happened throughout my childhood. And I don't know if sex trafficking happened within the cult. There was a lot of sexual abuse that went down. As far as sex trafficking, that's according to federal law, that's any sex act in exchange for something of value.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so that's for an adult. And then for a child, then any sex act in exchange for something of value. And you do not have to prove fraud, force, or coercion like you do with an adult, because children cannot consent. So it's automatically, even if the child takes a pornographic photo of them and sends it to somebody for some chicken nuggets, which is in cases that I've had to deal with, then that's sex trafficking, even if they're doing it to themselves, because there is no consent.
Oh my gosh.
They're a child, right? So
yeah,
it gets really interesting. But with adults, you must prove fraud, force, or coercion in order for it to be like, yep, that was sex trafficking. So the cult that I was raised in was a super fun, not really.
okay. My gosh.
Ultra conservative. I tell people a lot of times that it was Amish, just so they can wrap their heads around it. Do you know what Amish is? Like,
like Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. So it was really similar to those kind of ideologies and beliefs, but just way more toxic and way more controlling and conservative. So
are they still around?
Oh, yeah. They are called ATI, Advanced Training Institute, by Bill Gothard. And Bill Gothard, I believe, has stepped down recently because there have been sexual charges. And so, of course, they're doing an internal investigation.
Oh, gosh.
Which works out really well, right? So, yes, I was raised in that. And in that process, I was very much groomed for the sex trafficking aspect, which actually happened in my 20s when I was living in California. So they just set up the kind of mentalities. As a woman, I'm here to play house, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, be a baby maker, please my man at the drop of a hat. And I have no opinion, no voice, no nothing. That's what you're good for, and you're supposed to do it with a happy countenance. So I never made the cut because I didn't have a resting bitch face all the time. I did not have a happy countenance when I was scrubbing the floor with a toothbrush. It was always, and my parents are incredible people. Let me just preface that. It's just always interesting when you act in fear over something you love. It turns dysfunctional. And so they were trying to provide myself and my brother with a very different childhood experience that they had had. And they had very toxic, abusive childhood experiences. So they were trying to give us something different. And in that fear, they ended up putting us in a very dysfunctional situation.
That's interesting. So I want to learn more about your parents, because were they living with an Amish background at all? Was this like where did they come from, and how did they get to this ATI?
So my parents met in the circus. We are a circus family, so that's how we got from Italy to Sarasota, Florida. It's the winter quarters for the Ringling Brothers Circus.
Yeah, I've been to that. I've been to that museum before. It's awesome.
Oh, well, then you probably saw some pictures of my family in there.
What do your parents do? Were they acrobats?
My dad did tightrope. He did juggling. He did trapeze. He did everything. And then mom did the web, you know, the long rope that hangs from the ceiling and they twirl and like fall down it. So dad saw her across the way, across the big ring. And he was like, yes, please. And then he went for it. And you know, they've been together ever since. And so my parents really didn't want that kind of gypsy, you know, alcoholic, abusive, just toxic kind of environment for my brother and I. And so they found God. Mm. And then they found this extreme version of, you know, conservative Christianity. And we're like, yep, that's for us. It's got structure. It's got everything we don't know about parenting. You know, they can teach us everything and it seems like good values. So they went into it very blindly, just trying to do the right thing by us. And I don't think they even realized none of us really realized how toxic it was until we were out of it. And we're like, holy cow, that messed us up.
Yeah. Are your parents cleared of it now? Is everybody in the family like very, so they're okay. So you don't have any lingering.
Mm-mm. No,
that's great.
Lingering cult members currently.
Would they go back to the circus now? Does that seem, that's kind of an interesting idea that like the circus environment is healthier potentially than even what they got you into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they did not go back to the circus. You know, there's a very short age range that you can be a circus performer and a good one. And then there's a very niche kind of place. Like you go to Disney and perform, or you join, you know, one of those kind of places, and they are top notch athletes. So, you know, by the time we were kind of out of it, I was 15, 16 years old. And so it was like, you know, they were already kind of past that.
So they did. Do you ever do acrobatics? Did you ever walk a tightrope?
As a family, we would always, so for Christmas, we would have the big Italian Christmases with all the families together. So it's like gazillions of people. And so we couldn't afford presents for each other. So we would put on performances. Each family would put on a performance for the old family members from Italy. And they would all judge whoever had the best performance, and whoever got the best performance got like the gift basket. So that was our Christmas.
Oh my gosh. So the kids did have to learn like circus stunts.
Oh yeah. We're always doing flips and pyramids and juggling. And I had fire and knife juggling at every single one of my birthday parties. So
I want to, you know, I would do a whole nother episode. I mean, this show is very much about exploring the depths of the things that seem positive going under the surface and seeing what's there. And then figuring out, you know, with things that are negative, seeing the light or perceived negative. So that's the looping process. I am sort of curious, you know, like what the heck is going on in a circus? What is going on in the, like, what in the world is this circus life that was so corrupt and crazy? Are all circuses like this? Is Ringling Brothers the foundation of a very dark, scary, downtrodden life? What would you rather have your kids join, the circus or modern Hollywood?
Oh, definitely the circus.
Okay, so it's not as bad.
Oh, God, but no. They were.
Okay. I'm wondering how fun. The circus sounds pretty fun to me.
I think there's a lot more survival mentality in the circus, as to where, like, you all are surviving. You all are trying to make that next show worth it and make paycheck to paycheck and trying to perform, and you're pushing your body. So I don't think, as far as like Hollyweird and Hollywood, there is a lot of sexual weirdness that goes down there, whereas like the circus family, there's just, you know, people beat the crap out of each other. Alcoholics, you're experiencing with drugs, like it's not like weird sex stuff going down. I mean, I'm sure somewhere that probably exists, maybe that somebody else has experienced, but
I was gonna say, where does a pedophile carny fit into this?
I don't think that would be very accepted
in the circus
openly.
Okay, interesting. Like that's good to know,
because Italians are like very kind of old school, so if they knew that somebody was hurting kids, they probably just kill them and bury them themselves.
Wow, interesting.
They don't tolerate that kind of stuff.
Wow. Okay, so your parents, so they get you out of this environment as a rebelling against this lifestyle. And you know, I hate to compare your story to Nixium, but I feel like it's the most pop cult thing that we have right now. People looking at this as a lifestyle change, transformation, positive. We're going to respond to this one leader figure who has the knowledge and is going to transfer his knowledge to us. And of course, he gets involved with these people, allegedly. Actually, no, I'm pretty sure that's true. He actually did. He actually did do that. Mm-hmm. It's the context under which he did it that even people who were members of DOS, who were defenders of Keith Raniere, are like, no, this was an experiment. This was a fun thing. This wasn't in control. First of all, I do wonder if there were inner sort of circles within ATI. But what was the initial appeal? Did it have that late after work seminar, let's learning annex kind of, here's how you improve your life and use God kind of draw? Or what were they doing to bring people in?
I think their major draw was raising children well, and how to raise them to be great adults, and how to raise them to be godly people and have morals and be like the chosen generation of God, and that we're here to like love the world into like this higher moral standard. So for my parents, the big draw was curriculum on how to raise their children, because they didn't have a very good example of good parents. So when we joined ATI, it's also, and I don't want to like rain on homeschoolers, but it was like a homeschool curriculum. And I was homeschooled until I was 15 years old. My first public school experience was going to college at 15. And my mom dropped me off. You know, I jumped out of the minivan in my little skirt and my, you know, my little Amish get up and went
right
to owned everybody at calculus and algebra who were twice my age. So
right.
Mind blowing. But so I think the big draw was raising your children right and having them providing a curriculum with how to homeschool your children.
Yeah.
It was an alternative. It was the only really alternative back then to what was happening as far as public school goes, as far as like the world very much in the early 90s was all about materialistic things. And so you just didn't want that, which I think we can all agree, like having a hyper hyper addiction to materialistic things, to money. It's kind of like, ugh. And there's stuff about the public school system that's kind of like, ugh, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so it makes sense to me looking back. I'm like, yeah, I totally get how that could be super appealing to them.
Yeah.
And then like something like, thank you. Oh my God, I'm so grateful I found this. Like, it's such a relief.
Did they show up wearing, were they already wearing the garb when you would go to sessions? Was there a uniform? Where did this look fig come into it all that you had to dress up conservatively?
There are definitely requirements for what you could and could not wear. And most of those were derived somehow from Old Testament scripture. So having long hair was super important for women because it was in the Bible, it talks about their hair is their glory. And so if you had short hair, you were considered like evil, basically. I remember, and I don't wear like a ton of makeup. Like you can see me right now. Like I got a little bit of eyeliner going on. But I remember one time I put on mascara as like a 14-year-old girl. And one of the boys from another family goes, Mom, why is she dressed up like a bad girl? Why is she dressed up like one of the women from the Bible? And I was like, what? Like, all I did was put on some mascara. Like, I was feeling myself for once. You know, as a 14-year-old girl, there are very little moments where you actually feel hot. And I was feeling myself with my mascara. But obviously, tattoos are completely out of, those are completely evil. Any mascara, any makeup was out of the story question. Women have to wear skirts or dresses, and they prefer it to be at least to your ankles.
Right.
But definitely covering those knees, because those knees are like, whew.
yes.
Some of the rules were nothing on your shirt. So no words or pictures, because you'd be creating an eye trap for the men around you and causing them to stumble into their sexual desires. And that was your fault for any of that. So
interesting. Yeah. I do want to talk about their views on sexuality, because I feel like that's often, it's definitely talked about in Christianity. Yeah. What do you think the lines are here between really conservative Catholicism and preachers espousing the doctrine in a way that's sinful, and then this kind of setup where it's, they're moving you into a lifestyle. Why does this go a step further than just extreme Christian doctrine and dogma?
Well, I think the difference is you can say you believe something until you're blue in the face, but are you willing to live a lifestyle that like displays it? So you can say, oh, I believe, you know, that drums are evil, but then you go and listen to music with drums in it, then you're not really, the control factor, the belief really isn't there. But once you adjust your entire lifestyle to accommodate these beliefs, you're a true believer. Like, you're all in. And especially when it's things like, you know, girls can't wear pants, or you can't listen to music with drums in it. That's so different than anything we have available in modern world. So it's a huge stance. You're actually isolating yourself. You're making a spectacle of yourself by the way you present yourself. The whole idea derived from scripture was be in the world, but not of the world. So you're here, but I'm not like you. Because I'm holy, I'm set apart, I'm called, and I'm living this higher standard of morality. And so, like, you know, all things are permissible, or not all things are beneficial. And so that kind of mentality, others may, but I cannot.
And it was still still New Testament. It was still Jesus Christ. Christ is the Messiah. Did they add anything onto scripture to have a specific radical spin on it? Or was it just really following the book?
Well, the most radical, I guess, experience I would have would be as a woman. You know, there was no birth control. There was no form of any of that. I was not allowed to date people. My father would go and choose a man who could potentially provide for me, a potential good match. And then we would court to see if it was a good process. Now, courting is you have a chaperone. It's like a ritual for marriage.
Is that in scripture? Could you actually trace that to scripture?
I don't think so. There are different like snippets of it.
Yeah.
But it gets really weird with incest kind of in those areas, which again, I never had an sexual abuse in ATI. I know tons of people that did. It was more so like the rigorous, just like women are slaves, like just the rigorous housework. And now you've got seven. I knew a woman. Do you know the Duggars? The life, the counting, 19 kids and counting or whatever.
That no, show I don't. I'm not aware of it. I've heard of it.
TLC. Yeah. And so then they have another show now after it called Counting Out. They are in ETI. So I met them multiple times. And like they're women that I knew, I never saw them not pregnant. Like in all the years I knew them, because they're popping out 13, 14, 15, 16 kids. And the right. more kids you have, the more holy you are, which was extremely difficult for my parents because they only had two. And so for whatever reason, they couldn't have more. And so we were kind of looked down upon because there are only two kids in our family. And so as a young girl, growing up with this mentality of, I'm destined to be a baby maker. That's how I please God and get into heaven. I can never say no to a man. I must submit. I mean, my dad's choosing the man. I can't go anywhere by myself without a male chaperone. I got in trouble for looking at a boy for too long. And then like trouble, you get your ass beat or you get sent to the prayer closet. And this is not by my parents. This is by the institution. You get sent to the prayer closet where you're forced to fast and pray and memorize scripture. So they starve you. And then you have to memorize chapters of scripture without any food.
That did you experience that? You experienced that.
Oh yeah. My gosh. I was being disciplined for being in an elevator, for getting into an elevator with with a male. And there was no other like person in there, which I didn't like, whatever. Like I didn't even think about it. I'm trying to get to my room.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So. And also what's interesting here is if there is so much homeschooling involved, like when I imagine a cult, I imagine that your parents are saying, here you go. You're going to go into this building every day, learn from these same people. They're going to make you do things and then you're going to report back. So if your parents are taking on this mindset and then bringing it down to you, what were the moments where the community would meet together and the more traditional cult-like things were happening?
We had a annual conference, and so they would have national conferences all over for different like areas. And so our conference was in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we would rent out the entire Knoxville, Tennessee campus, university there, and use all the dorm rooms. Like it was massive.
Yeah.
Massive.
Were you skeptical at this point? Were you like excited by these things? Where did you buy into it? Where were you at mentally when you were doing
this? I'm trying to survive. Because I'm at the point to where I recognize I have to obey because I love my parents and I don't want to shame them, but I also want to have a future. And, you know, I have to be a good worker. I have to know my scripture. I have to play music. I have to write. I have to paint. I have to, you know, be able to make bread from scratch and sew anything in order to find a good husband who's going to take care of me. Because that's my only option. I can't work. I can't do higher education. That's my only option. So I was very aware of I have to be appealing and I have to perform and I have to find this husband who's going to take care of me. So I was very much in this, you know, servant. My worth is only due to my performance, how much scripture I can memorize, how humble and submissive I can be, is my countenance bright? Is it shiny? Do I have too much makeup on? Is this shirt too tight? You know, like constant just trying to adjust to fit this thing.
Right.
I mean, there was a little bit of racism I felt in there. I think I was really too young to really understand it all. I never saw there was only white people. That's all I saw were white people. And then I know I felt a little pushback because of being Italian and having dark hair. So a lot of the women that we considered beautiful were blonde haired, blue eyed.
Right.
And so I remember thinking that, And I remember hating the fact that I had dark hair and, you know, my hair is super, super curly normally.
Yeah.
Italian stuff. And so even that, it's like, oh, I gotta like look this very specific way in order to get a husband.
So are you, I'm wondering your buy-in factor, how long does it last? Like, were you, another example of, I mean, the pop culture example is Kimmy Schmidt, the unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. She's stuck mm-hmm. underground wearing this traditional clothing. There's a cult leader and she really believes in it for a long time until she's brought out of the world and they tell her, actually they tell her in the real world, hey, look, Kimmy, you were in a cult. How much buy-in did you have? Were you, and what was the moment that you started going, well, I know I have to do this because they want me to, but I kind of feel like this is crap.
I remember I did sneak in some Good Charlotte music. We had, you know, kids in the neighborhood that were friends with us and they would be listening to this stuff. I remember buying Pokemon cards and then my mom burned them because they were evil. Like literally oh, wow. burned them. I was like, well,
part of me thinks that you never really bought it.
Well, they're a part. I'm an Italian woman. I mean, telling me what to do goes against my freaking DNA and lineage. Like, you right. tell me what to do. I think I was in a survival mode for quite a while. I was also sexually abused by a neighbor during when I was like 7 or 8. So that shut me down for quite a while as far as my personality goes. But I was always very outgoing, very rebellious. I was super smart. So I was always challenging adults and putting them in their place. And that got me into a lot of trouble, obviously, but then that got a lot of beatings, a lot of spankings, a lot of starvings, a lot of prayer closet, you know, things. And that only built my rage up. So that's my probably earliest memory is rage.
Yeah.
And not being able to control that. I was never taught emotional control. So I think by the time I started going to college, you know, I was being dropped off by my mom at community college, you know, wearing my skirts and wearing my navy blue and white and no makeup and all this stuff and interacting with males for the first time was like absolutely mind blowing. Watching, you know, males and females interact and make out at the lunch table and all this stuff. It's like, what in the world? And part of me was like, they're going to hell because that's what I believe. And then part of me is like, hey, this isn't like what everything they taught me it was. It's not exactly true. Yeah. And I think the first time I drank alcohol and I wasn't shocked by God and sent straight to hell, I was like, maybe there's something else they lied to me about.
Because, what age like, was that?
I don't even remember. Probably like 16, 17 years old. Took my first sip. And so it was like, well, maybe this isn't all true.
Yeah. Did your brother buy it more than you did? Or
no.
Was he even more rebellious?
He was very quiet, introverted kid. So it's really hard for me to understand. I think inside he knew that it was bullshit. But I think he knew how to play the game until he was able to like leave and get out. So left after going to college. I started getting in, or, you know, I'm 15, 16, 17 years old. I start getting into more Pentecostal Christianity or like spirit-led Christian. And that was my way of rebelling. So that was my rebellious stage is getting into some Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
So I started
that's
going
interesting. Your come to Jesus moment actually
was literally come to Jesus. And I ran away from, I mean, I remember going to youth group, which was like, you do not go to youth group. That is where kids are just left to do whatever they want in the name of God. And it's horrible and immoral and disgusting. So I remember going there. And that was a huge ordeal. But then I felt like I really, like now I believe in God. But he's a lot different version than that guy. And he's a lot different version than, you know, the extreme guy over here. He's like this pretty cool dude in the middle who isn't anything like anybody has ever taught me. So that's when I feel like I first met who I believe God is to me. And it really started opening up my mind to a lot of other possibilities of what else isn't true, you know? And then my parents started easing up too. Like, I could wear pants that were loose fitting. I could wear makeup and I could, you know, do my hair differently. So they just kind of like, I think they got tired of it. And so I think they kind of started loosening up too.
And if I could ask you, I want to go to the transformation because out of it, because then the transformation out of it's going to get into what happened in your 20s, which sounds like a whole nother tragedy. But to go back to the cult for a second, could you tell me five things or I don't know. I'll give you five things that would let us know that this, in fact, was indeed a cult.
You could not question authority.
Great.
If you did question authority, you would end up being disciplined by authority. So
yeah, what was the worst kind of discipline that would happen?
You get sent away to a training center, usually in Indianapolis or Flint, Michigan was another one. And they had two training centers in Indy. They had the North Campus and the South Campus. If you went to the South Campus, you were in deep shit. If you were at North Campus, you were kind of rebellious and needed to be rehabilitated. So that's where I was at North Campus, trying to get my get straightened out because I was rebellious. I had friends who went to the South Campus and they are the ones that usually experience the sexual abuse at South Campus.
I was going to say, I feel like sexual abuse is something that often goes hand in hand with cults. That would be like a big number two, maybe three through five, honestly. Here's my question. With regards to the neighbor, that was that something that was just a horrible incident that happened by mere chance, or was that something that was actively related to the structure that the cult had set up for you to be able to happen?
Yes and no. So the neighbor was a child as well. We were both children when it happened, but I was taught to be submissive to men. I was taught to not ask questions. I was taught to be a yes person. So my mentality already had me set up to be a victim. The way I was groomed and trained. So when I found myself in that situation, I did not have choices. There was only one choice is to please him and to do what he says. And so then when I returned home, there was I couldn't tell anybody because I knew it was sexual. I didn't have any like sex ed or anything like that, but I knew that now I had a soul tie to this child who had sexually abused me.
Right.
And only my husband is supposed to have that. So now I'm shamed. And if anybody finds out, I will never have a husband, which means I'll like fail at life and I'll live off of the scraps that people choose to donate to me because work isn't an option for me as a woman. I have to get married. So
as you're going through this right now and telling me this, is there a part of you, I wonder what's going on in your brain. Like, is there anything that immediately rings up and goes like, yeah, that's right. That is a truth that I do deeply have a tie to that. If enough people pressed me and I was in a traumatic enough situation, it could just switch on again? Or is it so, as you're telling me this, you're like, this is such crap. There is no way I would ever buy into it ever again.
There are some things that still pop up that are old beliefs that I have to really be proactive against. So I'm married now.
Yeah.
I run my own business now. I mean, I work like crazy. I've done lots of over a decade in social work. So I understand the psychology behind it all and I get it. I think that I've started to learn to have a lot more compassion towards that version of myself because she was so hurt and so broken and so desperately trying so fucking hard to fit in and to make this work. And everything was really against me. And so I do have like some limiting beliefs around like my looks. So it's really hard for me to dress up and to think like I'm beautiful and try to make myself look beautiful because that just feels wrong. It feels sinful and it feels evil. So I recently had a photo shoot for my business. So because you need content, and it was so freaking hard. Like the photographer left, and I just like cried for like an hour because I was like, it felt so violating to try to look good and so conflicting. And then when I got the pictures back, I hated all of them because again, that like, this is evil. This is wrong. This is sinful. You know, like, who are you to think that you look good? You know, like all this crazy. So that's where I guess I still have those bigger issues still. As far as like sexuality, as far as how I interact with my husband, as far as how I interact with other people and stuff like that, like that's not an issue. But the self-image is like a huge issue for me.
And also, I mean, my gosh, that is such an issue for people that aren't in cults, too. So the idea that this even played into that and set an imprint could make it all the more difficult to, you know, I never have to deal with self-image issue. Like, nah, come on. That's a difficult task for most people. But I definitely know. I appreciate you going there with me and sharing that. I'm curious, Amanda, what do you think was the game that was going on behind the scenes of this? Was there a Keith Rene? I mean, you mentioned the person in charge at the top. You mentioned the Indianapolis, the sexual abuse going on there. Was there some sort of other mission below the surface going on that was really allowing this sort of thing to go on, or what were their good intentions initially? How would you explain that?
I mean, if you ever hear Bill Gothard talk or see his nasty ass face, he is a creepy dude. Like there is, I'm totally biased in saying this. Like you can just look at him and it's like, oh, I would not have that man around children. I think the whole thing behind it was money, honestly, because their programs were not cheap. Their trainings were not cheap. And part of me wonders if they were, because all the boys would go into like militia training, basically. They were called cadets. There were ranks that you could, like military ranks that the boys and men would achieve, and they would get military training from 6 years old up. So they would operate at these, I never saw them use guns, but they're all pretty like conservative Republicans. So I wouldn't be surprised if they all had guns.
Never
really talked about, but they were trained. And so a lot of times too, when there were natural disasters in areas where some of their facilities were, the government would call on these groups from ATI to come help because they're also highly trained in response teams and all that stuff. So like part of me looks back and goes, holy shit, were they like building a whole military to take over? Like, was that an agenda of theirs? Because they had a lot of people. They were all over America. They were in Russia. They had a Russian orphanage. And so part of me looks back and goes, okay, well, you know, we all know how that goes down is when you're taking children from another country, bringing them over to a country, and now having this cult specifically foster these Russian children.
Oh my God.
So I know that they're making millions upon millions upon millions of money, billions, because of the conferences they would have were absolutely massive. And it would cost a lot of money. And if you didn't go, like you weren't a true believer. So everybody went and spent all this money on this shit. And they had tons of courses and trainings throughout all of it. For you would send your daughter away to learn how to be a ruby. Proverbs 31, good woman, her price is far above rubies. And then you would send your boys away to be trained in this militia. So it was like a very intense money scheme. And I think there's probably a lot of fraud involved in that, as it was a religious organization. And then also the orphanage got a little weird, and then the militia aspect was a little weird. So I think there was a lot more going on than I could comprehend.
Yeah. What was with the sexual abuse? Was it mostly adults with children?
Yeah. So from what I've heard and from the other survivors, like I've talked to, is there was a lot of male adult on male children abuse happening. Yeah. So, and that would make sense considering the whole, you're not allowed to have sex with women. You're not allowed to, like, you touch them until a wedding day. You're not allowed to kiss until a wedding day. So whenever we see those natural desires suppressed, you start seeing more dysfunctional desires kind of leak out. And so that's where you get pedophilia. That's where you get, you know, rape and incest and stuff like that happening. So the most I've heard is a lot of young men being sexually abused by older male authority figures.
Oh my gosh. I know there was the documentary, The Cult Next Door, about, I was looking into it, about this. I imagine other people are out there trying to expose this and breaking people free. Was there a big takedown case similar to the Catholic Church at all, or are there still people out there that just haven't been charged with these acts of abuse?
There was a bunch of people that did come forward against Bill Gothard, and he was accused on some sexual allegations, but it's very much like FDLS, to where, do you know what FDLS is?
No, I don't.
It's like the polygamy cult.
Oh, right.
And so it's just, you just don't do that. You just don't say things like that. So as a woman who's been so shamed in this culture, and now this horrifically shameful thing has happened to her that she does not have the tools or emotional intelligence to process. Now you're telling her, hey, you need to go public with this. And now you need to come against an authority figure, a man of God. It's like, oh, that's a huge ask. That is, and a lot of them can't even handle it. They just can't handle it. You know, accepting the fact that they're a victim is, you know, crippling enough.
Yeah.
For them to go public and to accuse an authority figure, it goes against everything they've been groomed to believe and think. And so you still think
there's a lot of people out there. There's still a lot of people out there whose stories haven't been told.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh, are you kidding me? There are groups of survivors of ATI all over the place. I just try to stay out of those groups because there are trauma cycles that people get addicted to, and they get addicted to their own trauma. And I'm just not that there anymore. So I don't need to keep talking about it unless it provides education or inspiration.
Yeah.
I don't trade war stories.
Right. Well, and then, oh my gosh. So that's pretty good. So we have a good understanding in terms of what this cult life was like and you getting out of it. And then the next part of this is that you were sex trafficked, and I didn't even realize that it wasn't related. I mean, I mindset stuff was related, but I didn't realize it was a totally separate, like, thing. Where does that
twice, you know?
Yeah. What is? Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. Okay. Where in your life trajectory does that even come into play? I imagine it's, you go to college, and then what?
So I go to college, which was a huge rebellious thing to do again. None of my childhood trauma has ever been talked about, resolved. I'm still in the mindset. I don't realize that I was in a cult. I was just living this weird lifestyle. So I go to school. I'm in like 3 years of awesome school, super fun time in my life, amazing community. And then I graduate and my community's gone. My classmates are kind of like off doing whatever thing. And here I am, a 23-year-old adult who never learned how to adult ever. And so I'm completely lost. I'm completely insecure now. I have no idea how to handle my emotions. And all my childhood trauma resurfaces.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I start training MMA at an MMA gym to just like lose weight and be active. And I trained martial arts as a child as well. So, cause I kept punching people. And so my parents were like, just put her in martial arts to teach her discipline. And so she'll stop punching people. And I was really good at it. I got my black belt, my whole family has their black belts. We like to punch people. And so MMA was a natural thing for me to start doing. And I'm really freaking good at it. I love knocking people out. It's so much fun.
Right.
and I like lost a bunch of weight and I'm feeling like good about myself and I'm around these really unsavory characters.
Right.
You know, they're all on parole or just out of jail or just, you know, beat the crap out of their baby mama. And this is a whole new realm of people that I've never met before, but they are so open and honest with their emotions and their struggles. And it's extremely dysfunctional, but I'd never seen that before. They have no boundaries. And coming from a place of such severe discipline and boundaries where you don't talk about that stuff to this place where these people are talking about this bleepity bleepity did this and screw her.
Yeah.
And, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, it was fascinating. And for the first time in my life, I'm allowed to express emotion and I'm allowed to express the pain I'm feeling, whether it's current or realistic or not.
Right.
All my trauma just starts gushing out, you know, and starts acting out in crazy ways. So I'm drinking. I'm with this group that I consider my family now. I'm just being like very flirty and just, you know, like saying whatever the hell I want to say.
Yeah.
And I become this very raw version of myself.
Sounds like the circus all over again.
Dude, I am prime for the picking. I am.
Yeah.
And so okay. When a predator sees that, he knows like, got it. I can snatch her up really quick and control and manipulate her real quick. So that's basically what happens.
Wait a minute. A predator. Who is this predator? Was he MMA? Was it somebody else?
He was one of my coaches. So I was fighting professionally at that point and doing really well in the circuit. And so he was one of my coaches who's like, I can take you to the next level. Like we can get you a spot in UFC. So I was actually set to go do a fight for Dana for Ultimate Fighter 115. And I got into an accident and somebody else got my spot. But so he was like curating me for that. But then obviously, since I'm in no boundary mode, I'm like telling, yeah, I was raised this way. This is what I was taught. I've never dated before. I'm learning so much. And I played that little innocent, like, card, you know, like
yeah.
Teach me about the world, you know. And so
no, he yeah.
was more excited to teach me about the world and some other stuff. And that's what kind of manipulated me into this situation. So I started dating him.
Okay.
And so everyone's like, well, how do you go from dating someone to them trafficking you?
Yeah.
And it's a very weird, manipulative, slippery slope. So it starts, and I'm going to get pretty graphic here, so I hope that's okay.
We'll warn people. That's fine. Yes. Okay. Yes. No, we so need to know starts, about this for people that with, find themselves in a
you
situation.
You know, like, hey, babe, like, I love like you and you love me and we're doing this. It's awesome. It really turns me on because this other guy really likes you. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's like weird, but okay. He's like, yeah, it's super hot. And, you know, you can go flirt with him if you want. What? Like, that's weird, but I'm with you. Like, I don't want to flirt with him. And then, okay, whatever. He drops it. And then like this constant of that kind of conversation, it would, you know, it'd be really hot if you gave him a blowjob. And then like, that would be so hot. And that would really make me happy and really turn me on. What? And I'm like, this is what adults do.
Yeah.
This is an adult relationship is what he would tell me. This is how real relationships work. And he's like, you've never done that before. Come on. Like, let's go. Let's do it. You can do it. And like, okay. You know, and I want him to be happy. And so all those old things pop up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of I can't say no. I have to please him. If not, he'll leave me. This is the first time I've ever been in an adult relationship. Maybe he's right. He's taught me so much. He's gotten me already to this point as a fighter. Like, why would he lie to me? Like, that seems weird. But then also, you know, I've got a sex drive. So I'm like, well, like, okay, like kind of, I don't know. Like, it feels wrong, but it feels right. But blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
So you do this one thing. Or he's like, babe, we're really behind in rent. I really, you know, I do anything for you. You know that I'm trying to, you know, get you to be a professional fighter. I just need you to do this one thing for me. It's just with a friend. And like, it'll help us out financially, you know, obviously sexual. Okay. You know, okay. Or he would get crazy blackout drunk, him and his friends. And then they would all rape me. So it was just that all kind of like melded together. And so now you're compounding trauma on multiple levels. I don't have any idea of what real love looks like up to this point anyways. So now it's being defined as this really abusive, manipulative, toxic thing. So I don't even have a baseline to hold this up to, like, oh, this is wrong, because I don't know what wrong and right is in this context. I have gut feelings, but then I can't even trust those because I have 20 some odd years of stuffed trauma that I've never resolved.
Yeah. If you're listening right now, I am sick to my stomach about this situation. This is just like grueling to listen to, but I'm putting myself through it just because A, it's not as profound as actually what Amanda went through, but B, like, oof. I mean, I can admit as I'm sitting here, I'm not even cognitively fully comprehending how it all happens and blends in. Like, it's just, yeah, I could see how it could not. It's just like so many levels of cognitive dissonance happening at once.
Yeah. And it's not like I'm fucking stupid. It's not that.
Yeah.
But it's just this consistent breakdown of boundaries and a consistent violation, whether it's like incrementally small, like getting molested by my neighbor as a child, having all those boundaries and all those walls broken down through the constant brainwashing of the cult material.
Yeah.
Nothing. I'm not worth anything. I can't be beautiful. I have this guy telling me, you're gorgeous, you're sexy, you're hot, I love it. Here, do this thing that was once forbidden. There are multiple things in play here. It's not just go have sex with this guy for money. There's multiple things at play here.
That's what's tricky about trauma. It is not linear. Mm-hmm. It's not linear. It's like a use this word a lot in this show. It's multidimensional, and it's and it doesn't. Yeah, it's when people are like, "Oh, you like the expression of, well, the rape happened, and you gotta just get over it." Like, I hate that, because getting over it is not just. I mean, you can't just do it, and there's so many different layers to unpack that sometimes you're not even aware of because of the way the trauma stacks up.
Yes.
It's impossible to sort out. So, okay, so this man, this horrible human being, is making you, forcing you to do all these things. You're doing it. And then what happens next?
Well, there was a switch in our relationship, obviously. So there's a lot more, the violence amps up and the I love yous start to disappear almost completely. So we switched, and we call that like a gorilla pimp versus a Romeo pimp. And so a Romeo pimp is someone who comes in and like makes you believe that he's your boyfriend, he loves you, he showers you, and then he turns you out. A gorilla pimp comes in right away with the violence, like right away, abusive relationship, manipulative, being the crap out of you, and that continues. So he came in as a Romeo and then flipped. And so now he's blackout drunk all the time. He was a world champion boxer. So he is a fantastic fighter, and I can't stand up to that no matter how good of a fighter I am. We're usually around his friends, so there's usually a gang of them. And then he has children. And so I have to protect these children. And so now it switches from my own survival to protecting these kids. And whatever that's way more important to me than my own safety.
Who's the baby mama? She's out of the picture?
There's multiple. Come and go. Yeah, but I was like the bottom. So I was like the main one for that.
Why are these kids sticking around with him as opposed to the moms?
Because we're on a Native American reservation, and he's American. So he has rights to the children that supersede other partners. According to law.
What is going on with Native American? What? That's something that I never knew about before until now.
So he was very aware of the fact that he was trying to get me pregnant because he knew that he could have custody of the child and I could never take the child away from him because of Native American laws. And I was terrified that I would be in that position. So, you know, I would sneak out and take those Plan B pills like candy, trying to prevent that from happening, which again, I was told that I'm killing children. So now I'm a murderer in my own mind for taking these Plan B pills, because birth control is murder, right? From back in the day. So now I have that shame and guilt on top of everything else.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
It was a hot mess. Okay. So then that's what happened from romantic relationship to now extremely violent, dysfunctional. I have the responsibility of the children that I'm trying to protect.
Yeah.
And I'm like an all time low. Like I literally lose my mind. I can feel it fragment. Like I know I'm insane and I don't know how to fix myself. So I remember being very conscious of that, of I have lost my mind and I don't know how to fix it. And I had no idea. I had no idea about therapy. I had no idea about anything.
Right. Like
that. All right. So then one day I'm like, he's cheating on me. Like I have this epiphany that my pimp boyfriend who has two baby mamas is cheating on me.
Right. Right.
And I'm on my way to go to a client and fight him and do sexual things with him, because that's where he sent me. And I actually get into a car accident. A Canadian runs a red light and hits me with her Cadillac and totals my truck, and knocks me out. And it is the best thing that ever happened to me. She saved my life. So she hits me, she totals my truck. I come to, and there's a cop go, oh my God, I thought you were dead. I thought you were going to be dead. And I was like, all right. Cause my truck was like that crazy. And from that accident, I had severe brain trauma. So, the following weeks I couldn't put together sentences. I couldn't figure out how to order a pizza. Like I was in bad shape. And so I texted him at the scene, my pimp at the scene of the accident. I said, hey, I just almost died in a car accident. And he says, is your face fucked up? And I said, no. And he goes, okay, well, you're still fuckable. And a light bulb went on.
Oh, wow.
The only time a light bulb went on. And I was like, this isn't me. This isn't where I want to be. I have to get out of here. And I'm still not like, I'm being sex trafficked. I've got trauma. That's not the thought. I'm not there yet. It's, I have to get out of this situation because it's bad. Like, and I knew I had such a small window of that clarity moment that I had to act fast. Otherwise I'd get sucked back in. So I got sent to the emergency room, and he couldn't find me for a couple days. I bought a plane ticket during that time. I committed suicide during that time too, and was found and revived and brought back. I bought a puppy because I figured I wouldn't kill myself if I had a puppy. And then I moved back to Florida, all within a week of Valentine's Day.
Oh my gosh. What happened on Valentine's Day?
That was like 2 days after I got hit by the car.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And that's how I got out.
That's it? What happened? Do you realize it's a big, does the word sex trafficking mean anything to you at that point?
Mm-mm. I had no idea. That was something that happened in a foreign country in my mind. And then when I came back to Florida, so I was born and raised here in Florida. I knew I was messed up and I didn't know how to fix myself. So I had raging PTSD, it was just rage. I was just a rageaholic and I knew I had to fix myself. So I just started Googling mental health. I started Googling PTSD, brain trauma, and I just started consuming everything I could about healing yourself. And I did that for about a year, still not knowing what happened to me. And then I was like, you know, I'd like to help women who get hurt by abusive men. You know, I'm like, okay, I know it was abused. So then I start looking into different organizations, and I happened to apply for an anti-sex trafficking organization, and they hired me as their intake counselor.
Oh my gosh.
And then through their onboarding process, and their education of educating me about sex trafficking, I'm like, oh my, yep. I'm a victim of sex trafficking.
Wow.
Yeah. So then they put me through intensive therapy and paid for it all. So super grateful to them for that.
Wait, do you have to become an intake person for them for you to get the access to this therapy? Like, is that the agreement?
Yep.
Wait a minute. That seems like kind of a weird setup.
That's okay. I left them for multiple reasons, but they weren't the healthiest organization, but they did give me and teach me a lot. So I don't want to discredit that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll do it for you. Don't make people work for you to do therapy. What the heck? I guess otherwise therapy does cost money, supposedly. So I suppose. But I mean, do you feel like there's enough being, I feel like I see it all the time, victims of trauma, victims, like at least with social media, women have been able to connect and men as well. People of all genders have been able to connect and share their various traumas. But do you feel like there's enough? I definitely don't feel like there's enough public support for people who are victims of trauma that don't have the financial resources.
Because that doesn't make big pharma and all the government controlled entities any money.
This is why she's Q. This is why she's Q, folks.
But therapy doesn't, they haven't figured out a way to monetize that at a level that makes sense. Whereas if I can just give you a pill to calm the fuck down and not have to face your trauma and I get a huge payoff, yeah, I'm going to push that pill.
Right. But then don't you now kind of work for, do you work for the same government that we all detest? Or do you work for a different government?
I don't work for any government.
You don't work for any government. But you have done stuff involving undercover sex trafficking work.
Yes, I have. So, and what I say to people, because they're like, how can you work for a government that's corrupt and that?
That's what I wonder.
Because, listen, they have been playing the game for a long time. I also know how to play that game and get money to victims. So until we can take down the whole system together, Q, take their dirty money and use it to help save lives.
Wow. That's,
I have no problem with that.
Where did I really want to ask about the government, but I'm not sure how much you're allowed to say. Undercover sex trafficking. What does that mean exactly?
So sting operations. I've got a lot of tattoos. I know how those girls look and walk because I've been one of them. So I've posed as a woman being prostituted to extract Johns and pimps for arresting them. And then I've also gone into different, so a lot of these women end up in shelters when their pimps kick them out because they haven't made enough money for the night before. So they won't let them come back home. So they go to shelters. And so a lot of these places, and it's also where pimps find new girls because they're usually desperate and homeless. So here's this guy waiting at the front gate for you with a Gucci bag and said, let's go get your nails done. Yes, please. You know, so that's a great recruiting ground for pimps.
Yeah.
And I use prostitution and sex trafficking. They're the same thing. And that's not something that everyone agrees on. But that's what I believe. And we could get into that if you like, but not everyone believes that. So I just want to be super.
What's the controversy there? What's the difference?
Women are choosing to sell their body for sex is what people who are pro prostitution say. It's a choice they're making. They're not being forced into it. Having worked with hundreds upon thousands of victims, that is not true once you talk to them, once you have a conversation with them.
Is there a true prostitute out there? Do you believe there is?
I don't believe so.
Wow, that is a controversial view.
And I've worked with New Zealand government who has legalized prostitution on this matter. I've worked with adult sex industries on this matter, helping them kind of navigate through that conversation. And so my whole thing is, what little girl at 6 years old tells their mom and dad they want to strip or they want to be a prostitute when they grow up?
It is a question that intuitively feels like the answer would be most wouldn't.
And there might be like a 0.1% out there who, like, there's that whole empowerment movement of being, you know, I'm a powerful, sexy woman and I'm going to choose to strip or whatever. Okay. But I would be really curious to talk to that woman about her childhood and what type of environment, what led her there.
Oh, this is controversial. I love it.
Because I have not met anyone with an amazing childhood, engaged parents, who has been given, hey, do you want to become a doctor? Do you want to become a teacher? Do you want to become a lawyer? And had those opportunities presented to them and to go, you know what? No, I'm going to become a stripper and a prostitute instead.
Now, okay. And I was going to go into stripper next. I feel like there are shades of this. There are definitely shades of this conversation, because I certainly know in this woke era that I'm a sex worker and I'm proud of that. And you know, even I know people, I've been friends with people that have said, yeah, I used to be a dominatrix and it was good money. And I feel like the defense that I hear from people that are in trades involving sexuality is that, well, yeah, and I enjoy doing it and I'm making money off of it. So like, who are you to tell me that because I had this bad childhood, that means that I should be condemned for being this person that goes out there and uses my sexuality in a way that I'm enjoying and benefiting from? What would you say to that?
That's part of like the woke movement, right? Who's like, who are also all about self-awareness, self-improvement, healing, inner healing, being aligned, quantum physics. So if you're telling me that you're making money off the dysfunctional habits that you learned as a child, and that's woke, you're contradicting yourself.
Huh.
So like, let's really, there's no judgment or condemnation. I'm just thinking, hey, if you're claiming that this is the highest version of yourself, but you learned how to do this when you were 7 years old in a dysfunctional, toxic, abusive way, that's not true.
Do you ever get in fights with strippers?
No, because like if you walk into a strip club or if you meet a woman on the street and you have this conversation with them, they are not ready for it because they've given up everything and they have given blood, sweat, and tears to be in that moment. Like the abuse I endured to be a victim, like that's a price that I paid. And so for me to recognize that that was dysfunctional and toxic and let that go, that's huge. That's, you're telling me that all that sacrifice and hell I went through was for nothing.
Yeah. I guess I'm it makes sense. I totally get it from your perspective. I wonder from just to really slip into the mind here of someone that does this and is really enjoying the work, or says they enjoy the work, but maybe they actually do. I wonder, well, what does it look like if we unpack what's really going on? Is this a world where the strippers are going into sessions and realizing, well, wait a minute, I actually never needed to do this because I did have childhood? I mean, I don't know. I feel like this is a challenge. Anybody listening to this, if you are in any trade that involves sexuality, I'd love to have you on my show to, and even talk to Amanda, if she's willing to do it, to be like, hey, I did not have a childhood that was traumatic and I'm loving this work and it's okay. Or maybe you did have a traumatic childhood and you can come forth and be like, yeah, it's okay. Like, I'd be curious to have that discussion because I feel like it is, it's about time.
Mm-hmm. And I would say there was like 1% of the population that do exist are the ones that know I had no childhood trauma and I love being sexual and stuff. Selling sex acts.
Like, so you think it is possible? It's just rare.
Oh, yeah. I think it's possible. I think it is rare. And I think that there are probably, I think it's rare.
It does seem strange, though. I mean, even I've thought about, I've never been to the Netherlands, but even with these beautiful women there who are just clean, they're getting the test and they're selling themselves for money. There's a part of me that just goes like, really? Is this, I would love to meet someone who proudly is like, yeah, this is my highest ambition in life. You just don't hear that conventionally, but I'm not saying it's not possible either. I've just never had like a prostitute of prostitutes that's being like, yes, you should do this. Like, why isn't there a conference for women leaders for prostitution? Like, that hasn't come yet. Doesn't seem like it's going to.
There is.
Zealand, really?
There is in Australia. And they're considered very forward thinkers for having the laws that they do. I will tell you, New Zealand government called me up and said, hey, we need to talk to you because we legalized prostitution in 2004, I believe. And all of our teens are like going missing. And all of our teens are so addicted to porn, they're not engaging in after school sports or activities. Becoming a national issue. And so, I mean, of course, I'm like, well, to me, it's pretty damn obvious why.
Yes.
But as an American coming to New Zealand and talking to them about, hey, you should probably change your laws. I had to go through all of their legislation, all of their social reports, which was like stacks of material, and find the holes in there. And their biggest issues, and you can see the spike go up. It's like a couple years after legalizing prostitution, sex trafficking, child sex trafficking, and sexual abuse reports went down for a second. Hmm. Okay, that's awesome. And for a couple of years, it went down and then absolutely skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And so we see that trend wherever prostitution is legalized.
That is that true in Vegas too?
Mm-hmm. That child sex trafficking escalates after a couple of years. So when people tell you, yeah, you can find data that says, oh, see, we legalized prostitution, and see, you know, the bad stuff went away for a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember in my education watching Penn and Teller's BS. They did a whole episode on prostitution. I mean, those are two guys that live in Las Vegas. I don't know if they've personally ever paid for prostitutes, but they definitely are pro stripper. And on that show, they make a pretty convincing argument that there'd be a lot the bad stuff that is associated with having prostitution be illegal justifies making it legal just so that bad stuff goes away, i.e. more drugs, more da 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 da. Like, do you, like, how would you contest that? What do you think? What's your response to legalization of it versus it's still going to happen anyways, just in an illegal way?
So I'm like, this is where I'm conflicted, because I'm pro small government. I don't want a government entity telling me what the hell I can and cannot do with my body. It's
right.
At the same time, I'm anti this, because what I'm seeing is innocent lives of children being put at risk because I want freedom to do with what I want with my adult body. And I don't know how to fix that. And I don't know how to close that gap. Because that's what I see as a direct result. So there has to be a line somewhere to where we go, those things are permissible, but not beneficial. And so, like, I don't know what the solution is to that.
Yeah, that's very complex.
I just know that I'm okay with giving up my right to sell my body for sex if it protects children from being raped.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Look, you know what? Before we tie this up, we need to get to a little bit of the Q stuff, the conspiratorial, as much as you're allowed to say. So back to the original question. Yeah. Like, why the alt-right, the Trumpers, the people, it's very much people that are pro. For some reason, the right wing is so against this deep state pedophile conspiracy, Pizzagate. Can you speak to that at all? Where is it myth? Where is it real? And where should we be looking to stop it if it is real? So that just tells me it is real.
Well, listen. So it's kind of interesting because sex trafficking has been a left issue. Social services, childhood sex trafficking, prostitution, all these things have been a left issue for a long time.
Until
a couple of years ago, even, it was considered, I mean, people like to decide in their mind where they think I'm politically by what I talk about and about it, what I do. I will tell you straight up, I'm pretty damn in the middle. So I like making money. I like business. And so when you talk to me about capitalism and all that stuff, I am more so conservative. When you talk to me about social work and all those stuff, I'm a little bit more left. Do whatever the hell you want to do, as long as you don't hurt kids, animals, or old people, you know, like. So for the longest time, doing all the anti-sex trafficking work that I've done, people assumed that I was liberal. And that was always interesting to me, because being raised in a church environment, you're always taught to take care of those around you. You're always taught to feed the homeless, to serve people. So I was always like, that's so weird that they think that it's only a left issue for people who generally, you know, don't identify as churchgoers, right?
Yeah.
So that always like didn't fit in my head because I saw the opposite happen. And now recently it's a only conservatives, only Republicans and Trumpers care about children. Like is the thing.
That's the cultural myth being, right. Or yeah, that's what's being told.
And that's like, and both sides have done their damage. Both sides have done their damage in that they've created it both at different points, a very sensational thing.
Yes. That
undermines it all completely. Exactly what you're saying. So while it's awesome to be like, cool, now the world cares about something I've been fighting against for the past 10 years of my life. It's also really disheartening to see it turn into such a circus.
Yes. So,
all that being said, I've worked with governments, multiple government agencies. I've worked for government agencies. I've worked undercover and they didn't know I was undercover. I've written federal legislation and passed it. No one has their hands clean at that high level of power. Nobody. I don't care if they go to church. I don't care if they're all for all saving the whales and all the flowers and everything. Everybody's hands are dirty at some point to get to that level to play that game. You have to be. And even in local politics, like I've played a role in helping some local politicians. And I'm like, you're even dirty. Like, even
is it a big, is it a vast conspiracy? Is it all connected? Oh man, that's the real question. I'm having two people on in a couple weeks to talk to me about the connection of child sex trafficking and the Illuminati and how it's been going on historically for ages. And that just creates this idea that, yeah, it's systems and it's passing down legacies and skull and bones and secret societies, and it's all the same thing. And I think people like, if this is happening, we need to expose it and we need to stop it.
Well, yeah. So yes, I believe it is all connected. I've seen too much in my own career that it's like, that's too connected. So I've been in courtrooms with judges who has given a baby over to the rapist father. He raped this girl when she was a teenager. She got pregnant from it. And then he got custody of the baby. You know, seen things like that because he was paying the judge off and because of numbers, not because of like, this judge is corrupt, but I need these amount of numbers to report so that this program stays open so I can keep helping so many people. So I'll like put this one child's life in danger in the name of helping all the other children.
Mm.
And I think that's where it starts. I think that's how these people start violating themselves and allowing and rationalizing this corruptedness. And then that goes from, okay, well, now I get a little bit more money so I can go and, you know, take care of myself so I can be a better judge and play this role. And it escalates. And I think that's how it starts. And I've seen so much of that. After I went to DC and wrote bipartisan legislation to help aid victims of sex trafficking with a couple different congressmen. And
that's
amazing. Yeah, it was total bluff. And then I had to like actually go do it because I bluffed so hard.
Right.
And when I came back from there, I had dead animals in my yard. My house got shot.
Oh my gosh.
I was started to be followed. Like, I swear to God. And like, I don't really talk about this ever, but, and I had one of my undercover like informants come to me and go, you have to get out of this industry, they're gonna kill you. Like, you're gonna end up dead. And I was like, oh, like I'm like not doing anything. Like, it's a grain of sand. It's like a drop in the water. Like, I'm not like making,
yeah.
I mean, I was making pretty big busts here in Florida, but I wasn't like rocking any, you know, federal boats. And the legislation I passed was just like $75,000 a year. It wasn't like massive money. And then I was having like two or three other random people coming to me, you know, like, hey, your name got brought up. You have to get out of this. Like, they're going to kill you. And I was like,
oh my gosh,
crazy. And then my house got shot up and then like all the disemboweled animals started showing up in my yard and I'm like, cool, I'm done. So, and my last job was with DCF, was with working in the foster care system. And it was, I had to quit because of the threats. And then also because children would just disappear.
Oh my gosh. What That's one of the things they say, missing children. Look at the numbers every year.
And it was like, and nobody cared to find them. And I felt like I was going crazy because I'm like, this is a problem. Like, this is, you hired me as an anti-sex trafficking specialist for foster care. Like, hello, like, we need to go find these children. And I got reprimanded for pushing it too much, for not staying in my lane, for speaking out, because I started involving all my government people. And so I started putting the heat on some people and they did not like it. And so basically I was forced into a position to where I had to quit. And I was like, well, screw this, man. Like, I can't do anything inside the system, but I can do a whole lot outside the system. So I'm acting as a consultant for a few different individuals in government. And I'm acting as a consultant for a few different organizations and agencies as well, in addition to my business. But yeah, it's definitely scary. And, you know, a lot of my friends are experiencing the wrath of fighting against this. And it seems so wild. Like, it's like my friend is in a lot of trouble right now because she's been actively speaking out against this. And like FBI, death threats, being fired from jobs. Like, this is what they do to you to shut you up. And if they're going through that much trouble for a small fish like me and like her.
Yeah, what? When is this all going to stop? When is it all going to stop, you think? Is there actually, I mean, the nice thing about the queue, the one nice thing is that they were, there were some other, I mean, they promised time travel and disclosing Roswell too, which is pretty cool. But they're also like, yeah, here's what's going to happen. The world is going to see recorded confessions of all the people who've done stuff. They've already arrested all of them. Trump is the savior of all this, which I still just intuitively find hard to believe, but maybe, who knows?
We the people are the savior of all this.
Right. That makes sense. Is there going to be a moment where can anybody take them down, or is it just going to keep going on forever?
I do not have the answer to that. And so people often ask me like, hey, like, how do we solve this pedophile issue? How do we solve this sex trafficking issue? Because it's so intrinsically like, into everything we do. Sex sells, it's in our marketing, it's absolutely everywhere. So how do we combat this? And I say it starts in your house. How are you interacting with your children? Are you raising them to disclose? Are you raising them to be empowered? Are you teaching them what a healthy sexual relationship looks like? However the hell you identify, but like, let's talk to a kid about their bodies. Let's train them about their bodies. Let's have open conversations about emotionally healthy relationships. And if we can start raising a generation that is actually woke and actually self-aware of what a functioning, emotionally intelligent human being should look like, we're going to eliminate the majority of our world's problems right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're a copywriter. So.
Yes.
So how does that all come into? I mean, I've seen you kind of definitely, even though you're, when you promote your business, you definitely come from a very heightened sort of spiritual, looking from the top down perspective that I think is, well, it's refreshing in the world of copywriting, which is all about, you know, hustle and figure out what sells and all this stuff. I mean, yeah, what do you think the big connection is to everything that's led up to now, to what you're doing as a niche consulting and copywriting agency at inquiryco.com? How did you get there?
Well, during all of this, even from when I was a child, I was not allowed to have a voice. I was not allowed to express myself, have an opinion, blah, 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 blah. So writing was the only safe way for me to do that.
Yeah.
So I started expressing myself at a very young age and really bad handwriting. For a long time, I have boxes full of journals in my closet. My first journal I started when I was 6 in a Coca-Cola notebook. And I had big feels, so I was expressing them. So writing has been something, has always been my safe place.
We're also going to link to your book. You have a book, right?
I have a couple, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you have a book about, wow. You've got this subconsciously conscious, which is, well, one of my missions in life is making the unconscious conscious. I mean, so you've got, did you start writing books first, or were you copywriting, or did it all just kind of fit together?
It all just fit together. So for when I worked with all these nonprofit agencies, I would just end up in that role for them where I'm writing all their newsletters, all their PR, managing their social media, doing all that stuff. So when I quit the system, it was a supernatural thing for me to step into because I'd already been doing it for massive organizations anyways. In the whole strain of people have messages and stories that need to be heard. They just don't know how to communicate them all the time. And I know what it's like to not be heard. I know what it's like to be muted, and it sucks. So I want to make sure that these individuals who are living out their life purpose, who are trying to find their niche, are able to step into that in a really powerful way and clearly communicate what they want with the world. So it is a very spiritual thing, you know?
Oh man, I'm going through it right now, trying to figure out what the brand of this show is and what I'm trying to communicate to the world. Maybe I'll consult with you. I think it's definitely, you really, to get clear on that, I've discovered is a very transformational and grueling, and they warned me it would be so, mm-hmm. but I didn't believe them until it was there. I'm like, oh no, this is just figuring it out. You gotta come up with the clever words. And then they're like, no, you actually have to look at everything in your life up to this moment and communicate it in a clear way and then make it valuable to others. And that to me is like, oh gosh, how do I do that? I know that would be a whole nother conversation, Amanda, but what are your initial thoughts on people figuring out, you know, how to use their trauma or what have you and transform it into something that is useful?
So that redirect is huge, because people would always be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You were sex trafficked and abused. And I'm like, dude, joke's on him. I became like one of the world's leading anti-sex trafficking experts.
Yeah.
I've like saved thousands of lives. So joke's on him. So it's looking at that, getting some healing and getting some space from that trauma first. You need some time and you need some really good therapy. And then you're able to see the beautiful elements of it. And the beautiful elements of it is I understand what abuse is, and I can help so many people, and I can help share so much knowledge. Like, God, that was such a gift. It was such a gift. Like, because like, look what I've been able to do. And not to toot my own horn, but like, it's pretty badass. Like, that's pretty cool. And now I'm in a little bit of a different stage to where I've even taken that to a different level, and it keeps evolving the more you step into it. So I would say if you have something traumatic that happened to you, just sharing about it will re-traumatize you. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. I've had years and years and years of intensive therapy, so I can talk about these things without having nightmares, without re-triggering myself. And a lot of people don't get there. So make sure you're there. You shouldn't have any icky feelings from sharing your story. That's how you know. And then find those silver linings. Like, what gifts did you take away? How has it made you into the person you are today? What are the pros and cons of that? What does it help you understand about life? How does it help you connect to other people? And as you start pulling back those layers and those curtains, you start to find, you know, oh, actually, as a kid, I used to love writing. And actually, as a kid, it was really important to me to be heard. So it makes sense that even as, you know, here in my 30s, that's still a huge thing to me. And that's what my business is based off of.
Yeah.
And you'll find your way back to those things, and you'll realize that it's actually not so hidden at all.
Would you ever release those journals?
I don't know. People would be like, she is unstable.
It would be interesting to see the journey of you as you went through this. Now, the other thing I was going to ask is, do you, for anybody listening that might think they're either in a cult or have been a victim of having been in a cult / sex trafficking victim, and if you're listening to this, what would be the best first step that person could take to get on a productive right foot?
If they're in the middle of being trafficked right now,
I mean, I get, or they think they might be. They think they might be, and they're hearing you talk about your story, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I need to get out of this, and I don't want to like keep re-traumatizing myself, but I really want to get out and also have control over my mental state in this situation."
So yeah, they first need to get someone in their life that can speak some truth to them, that can like really assess the situation and be like, "Okay, here's your action steps." So I would, if I ever have anybody who's like, "Oh my God, I need help," I send them to Sela Freedom, S-E-L-A-H, Freedom. You can either go to selafreedom.com or you can call them at 1-888-FREE-ME, however that works out.
We'll link to that in the show notes for people. For
and
sure.
They have a hotline that you know, you can call and you can even leave a message. And you can be as cryptic as you want to be. So they'll just return your call and they'll be really sensitive. So if like somebody else picks up the phone, like it's a male voice or something, they're trained to know how to navigate that situation without putting you or the victim in danger. So they're really well trained. I trained them all.
Great.
So they're probably the best anti-sex trafficking organization for domestic sex trafficking here in America. And so they have the best safe houses as well here in America, in my opinion. They have about an 80% success rate, which is unheard of in the addiction trauma world. Usually it's more like 50 or 60% recovery rate. So their stuff works. So call them, get in contact with them. And if you call the National Human Trafficking Hotline, they'll usually redirect you to Sela anyways. So just call Sela.
So Sela. And what about the cult stuff? I mean, do you have any recommendations for people that break free of their cults?
I mean, get some healing and find a mentor. So finding a woman who could teach me how to be a woman was really important. Like even someone that I still have issues with like my clothes and like what I wear. So sometimes I need to take a picture of my outfit and send it to her and be like, is this appropriate? Because I either sometimes go hypersexual or I either go like to where I make myself look bad because of my weird ideologies. And so I'm like, hey, is this like appropriate? Does it look good? You know, to have those sounding boards for how to be a woman. And for the longest time, I mean, I'm much better now to where like, I don't need that as often, but for a while there, I had no idea how to not flirt, how to talk to someone and just have a conversation and how to be a normal functioning adult. So I did therapy. Obviously I'm still in therapy. And then I had a couple of mentors that were a sounding board for me.
And if people do, I mean, you were saying before we started this interview that you've had people who have been in cults and are curious about or maybe involved in sex trafficking reach out to you at inquiryco.com. How does that happen?
They hear my interviews or even on my homepage. I said, hey, I know what it's like to be muted. I was sex trafficked. And so like, I'm pretty straight up about it. And I think people,
that's like, an interesting niche. I mean, that's an interesting niche as a copywriting.
It makes me memorable. Right. So I have no qualms about using my trauma as a catalyst for my success. And some people like, for whatever reason, some people think that that's like tacky or like inappropriate. And I'm like, oh, hell no. Like I earned this shit. Like I went through it. So I'm not going to be ashamed about using something that was potentially really negative in my life as a positive. Like, you can't judge me for that.
What would you say to that's great that people can get your services. What would you say to the exotic dancers and prostitutes listening to this right now that are like, this woman, she is completely shat on my freedoms. I want to go out there and I want to do this. What is this perspective? I do not like, what is your message for these people that are mad at you right now?
Listen, there is no judgment. There is no shame. And I'm not saying you are not free to do what you want. I'm inviting you to a deeper level of freedom. And I'm inviting you to a deeper level of self-love that you believe is acceptable for you and that is normal for you.
Wow. That's very empowering. Are you Q?
A lady never tells.
Wow. A copy and niche specialist, author, former cult victim, and former sex trafficking victim turned sex trafficking legislator and undercover, and she's cracking down rings. And, you know, this is, I mean, Amanda Katarzy, you are such a, I think you're an inspiration to a lot of people, but also just, yeah, I very much appreciate your honesty and your willing to share this. I think it's important. And I'm now worried for my life. So, like, am I getting in trouble for releasing this to the public? I don't know.
You might get censored.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show, really.
Thank you so much. It's been a blast. It's been a lot of fun. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
What do you think, huh? Pretty good attitude for somebody that went through all that stuff. And, you know, is she cute? Is she? Look, I'm not going to say she's not either. Definitely check out cellafreedom.com in the show notes. This is serious stuff, and it's important because you can see how something so innocent can quickly turn dark quickly. Too quickly. I mean, that's how quick. That is quick. Yeah, no, really. Amanda, I'm so grateful she came on and shared her story. And I really like her energy. My gosh, how do you have that after finding yourselves? You know, it's interesting how trauma can sometimes shape people to be so bright. That to me is one of the most remarkable aspects of doing this podcast so far, seeing that come to fruition. Amanda Katarzy, thank you again for coming on the show. For those of you listening, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review to Open Loops Conversations That Bend. We have more episodes. I'm going to release a lot coming up this week. And if you're listening when this has come out, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Still, to me, one of the, I mean, my gosh, from a hypnotist perspective, from a performing arts perspective, that speech, the mission, but the speech, to me, is one of the greatest pieces of art ever delivered in, recent history, I would say. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to I Have a Dream, I would listen to it. It's an amazing, amazing story. And I wish that his dream can get further to coming true, because we've got a long way to go. Thank you all for listening.